Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
What just happened?
Well, your sister just got kissed.
Dad!
Well, you did. Look
oh,
at
no.
her. Jonah! Look at that face.
Dad!
Your sister. Hey, let's write her a song
no,
about
that's not write her a song.
No!
Stop it!
Okay.
Are you okay?
Yes, but.
What?
Wow.
I'm going to sleep. I hate you.
Welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I'm John.
And I'm happy.
And I'm here.
I don't know why I said that, but the disappointment in your voice just brought a smile to my face.
Look, whatever Joseph and I did for you to, like, go fly to Egypt and, like, inflict some kind of ancient Egyptian curse on us... We apologize. Like, Mortal Kombat wasn't that bad in retrospect.
Oh, I'll fix to say.
Oh my gosh!
I know
you
what
did
I
not
did.
Just don't even.
Oh,
I'll fix to say. I know what
you
I
brought.
Did.
Oh yeah. Why am I getting retroactively punished? Wait. Why did you invoke the sparks
now,
on me?
You think this was bad? I'm sorry. You're complaining about. Which I'm gonna go ahead and say that this is not indicative of your feelings on the subject, but you. You're complaining about this movie, and I haven't even. I could do so much worse. In fact, this reminds me.
I know, and that scares me. Well, welcome to the last episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. Is the cursed
just like
one,
Elton
the
John's
ancient
last
one?
Tour.
I believe that's actually his last tour. He's 75. He's going to be spending the rest of his remaining days, him and David, just spending their billions. Also, he keeps doing, like, duets with, like, Dua Lipa, so he's never going to run out of money.
True.
He's never going to have a last song.
Ha, 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 ha.
This is actually an interesting week because you invoked a movie written by a writer I hate, starring a singer and actress you hate. This is going to be a weird episode.
You know, both of us kind of have nemesis. Like, that we're dealing with this week.
I believe it's Nemesis. Which I also
I believe it's Nemesi.
No, I think it's actually going to be Nemesis. I think I'm actually correct linguistically. I'm not sure. I don't want to die on this hill, but anyway, this is not a language podcast. We review chick flicks allegedly. So
it's been a while.
I mean, last week did fall into our first bullshit rule, but this week, oh my god, takes up the second and third bullshit rules, you know, hardcore. So,
I think this goes all the rules.
Yeah, actually, yeah. You know, it's been a really long time. It's April, so you can say we're like a quarter of the way-ish through the year. So, I think that it's time
for that depends on when this episode gets edited and unleashed.
Us to do a little reminder of the rules of what constitutes a chick flick.
You know, while I was at work today, I was honestly like, we should remind them what the bullshit categories are. So,
yeah,
Sammy, you want to do that?
So. Sure. Yeah. Okay. A chick flick is any film written or directed by a female, any film with a strong female lead, or any film that panders to women.
So in case anyone's wondering why we did Long Kiss Goodnight last night, it's because Geena Davis was the lead.
Right, exactly. And so we pretty much crafted this so we can fit almost any movie we want to watch into our bullshit criteria, because that's what this is really about. Including Wayne's World, apparently.
Well, both of those films were directed by women.
And to cover everything that we've cannot fit into our criteria with a crowbar, we have the manly movie of the month and now Surviving Sports Flicks.
So, yeah, we created a whole separate. It's like sometimes the sports flick is a manly movie, sometimes it's a chick flick. It just kind of depends on how we were feeling that week.
So basically, this should just be called Surviving Movies.
You know, we could do.
Yeah.
Or we can just the podcast to three friends try to inflict movies on each other and see who breaks first.
You know, we've made it this far.
We haven't quit yet.
Yeah. We'll see how this episode goes. And if it goes well, I'll consider not throwing Caligula somewhere into the mix.
Oh, come on now, guys. If y'all can make it through Mortal Kombat Annihilation, we can make it through anything.
We're not doing Caligula.
I'm partially on her side, and I like that movie. Also, I am pointing in an empty room to my right, because I'm pretty sure that's accurate to where Sammy is.
One of these days, we'll get all three of us in a studio together. Okay, so anyway, we've kind of alluded to it, but I guess do we want to tell the listener?
Well, we've been going for like 6 minutes. They downloaded the episode. If they haven't figured it out, along with my bad joke. Yes, this week we are doing the Nicholas Sparks movie, The Last Song, written by my nemesis, Nicholas Sparks, starring her nemesis, Miley Cyrus. So I think I think this week it's going to be us. I think right now... We just need to apologize to you, Joseph, specifically, before the fight begins.
Oh, don't apologize for that. I enjoy a fight.
Yeah, well, wait, you made us watch Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Fuck you. Apology withdrawn.
This is his payback. He can sit and listen to us bicker for the next hour.
That is very
exactly. All right. Well, why don't we play the trailer so we can get that hour started? How about that?
Dear Ronnie, please know that none of what happened between your mother and me had anything to do with you. I hope this summer will give us a chance to reconnect.
Yeah! Oh boy.
So the word is you're from New York. So what are you doing down here?
My mom shipped me and my brother to my dad's for the summer.
Look, I got bacon here.
Got breakfast.
Vegetarian, Dad. It's ridiculous.
Beautiful melody. I'd probably talk about this with a girlfriend if I had one here.
Oh, do you want to talk?
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Sometimes you have to be apart from people you love. But that doesn't mean you love them any less. Sometimes it even makes you love them more.
Stop smiling like that. It's creeping me out.
My smile creepy?
Let's see it. Kinda.
All right. The Last Song, starring Miley Cyrus, Liam Hemsworth, Greg Kinnear, Kelly Preston, Bobby Coleman, and directed by Julie Ann Robinson. And before we begin with the usual question, I have to say, we almost had the chance, and we still kind of do, to do 100% of Robinson, the director's film output, because her only other feature film would have been in The Hygelpocalypse.
Oh.
Yeah, she directed One for the Money.
Oh, God.
The rest of her career is like TV, and the most notable one, the one that made me raise my eyebrows, she did She directed this British miniseries called Blackpool, which was a murder mystery set in a casino in Blackpool that was also a musical. And it led to one of the worst television shows ever, because America remade it as Viva Laughlin. Does anybody remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, it was a notorious flop on the level of, does anybody remember the Caveman series that ABC did?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, well, Sammy is apparently, you know, safe here, but Viva Laughlin was canceled after 2 episodes. So,
wow.
And it was like a notorious flop. Like, people were writing about how bad it was. But, but is the last song bad? Let's get into it. Joseph, Sammy, do you survive? No. When was the first time you saw this movie and why?
Well, because I know what y'all's answers are. We'll do mine first.
I don't know what Joseph's answer is.
I'm pretty sure I saw this in theaters. In fact, I can almost guarantee it. I don't have, like, a specific memory of it, but...
It stands to reason it would have happened.
Yeah, it does. I think I've seen almost all of his movies in theater.
Seen 2 in theaters.
I don't know
one if of which
in theater.
I saw the... I saw The Notebook and The Choice in theaters. One of those I was paid to do. The other one, it was technically an internship.
Okay, so Joseph, what about you?
I watched it less than 24 hours ago.
Hi, Sammy!
The reason I watched this movie is because we have to talk about it.
So it's okay. You guys can say thank you.
We'll say
that. I guarantee you where the word "you's" involved. I don't know if the word preceding it is "thank." So
hey,
my
this
second
is a
view.
Family-friendly podcast.
No, Florida. It is not. We did Showgirls.
That's true.
Yeah. But my second viewing was yesterday, and I reviewed, and I did that because my first viewing was like 3 days before that. So I was like, "What happened again?" Oh yeah, she played a song. That's what happened. And something about turtles.
Oh, the turtles. That was a great part.
Yeah. So, something, you know, some weird codependent couple that, you know, neither of those people were good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think we're going to kind of get to that. But I do want to get something out of the way.
What's that?
Okay. The one agreement that John and I are probably going to have, I just figured we should go ahead and just agree and get that over with. Liam is the lesser Hemsworth. You're not going to get...
No. Actually, you and I agreed that he's the middle Hemsworth because there's the even less famous third Hemsworth brother.
Right, but of him and Chris, he's the lesser Hemsworth.
Yes, that is...
Now, where we're going to disagree is the statement I'm about to make, and I'm just glad John and I are not in the same room.
Look, you can survive a remote being thrown at you.
On the rewatch, I know you love her. Don't get me... I understand it. I'm not knocking Miley Cyrus's talent. She's a very talented artist. Acting is not necessarily her best talent, and even though Old Boy is, like, not the greatest actor in the world, he really, like, circles around her.
I kind of have to agree with Sammy.
Yes!
And I found her acting and her character grating in this movie.
Well, you guys have to remember what the intention of the character was, and apparently... I guess the note that Miley was given was be an unlikable bitch for like an hour.
Oh, and she was.
she took that note and she ran with it. No, it's not just that. The sum of it is acting choices. Like, she just, yeah, I don't know.
Well, let me before I come up as the Miley. Well, I guess I am the Miley Cyrus stan on the show by default. I like Miley Cyrus based on the Plastic Hearts album, the album she dropped like last year or year before, Time is an Illusion. And I like that she has found a style that kind of fits her voice. And then she just dropped a live album. And hearing kind of her do a semi career retrospective of her, you know, so basically from Party in the USA forward, she has grown as a musical artist. I don't have a good thing to say about her as an actress. I did not grow up on Hannah Montana. She's apparently been in four other movies. I do not remember her in any of them. Of course, one of them, she was a literal child.
So you've
been correct.
Right, with an asterisk. Like, I will die on a hill defending her as a musician. Have at her as an actress, because this is my one and only true impression of her. Because I am just too old to have grown up on Hannah Montana. And honestly, most of those Disney shows, I've seen clips of them. And the fact that I like Ariana Grande as much as I do, which isn't much, is a miracle, because, ooh, she's awful. Most of those shows are awful. But they're also, I'm also a good two decades away from being remotely close to their target audience. So,
you know, hold on a second. We're going to role reversal really quick. Uh-huh. I'm actually going to defend Miley Cyrus for a second here. I know, shocking.
Are we recording this?
Also, the Plastic Heart. Actually, miracle, we are recording.
Yes.
First of all, Plastic Heart's album is awesome, but.
Yes.
This is not her best impression acting wise. I'm not saying she was terrible. She wasn't like unbearable. Her character is, mm-hmm. She just was not very good. And he was much better, right? And even for, oddly enough, like, their chemistry was pretty good, I will say, for her acting not being great, but that's because they were really dating. And you know, which is difficult in a movie with Greg Kinnear, because you kind of feel like, and we'll get to her brother, who also did a fantastic job.
Well, let's just sit here and admit that Greg Kinnear is the GOAT in this movie. Oh, and Kelly Preston, who is barely in this movie, is probably the second best actress in this movie. Then maybe the kid, and then the couple.
Yeah. But I honestly think, and my memory's not great about it, but that she was better in Hannah Montana. Like, that, it suited her a little bit better. Yeah. Maybe it was just more natural. I don't know, but.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take your word for that, because this did not make me excited to go back and watch Hannah Montana as a grown-ass man. Also, I have apparently seen her in like four other movies. I don't remember her in any of them, honestly. And I think most of her acting credits, because she has like 50 acting credits on Letterboxd. I was looking her up. But a lot of them are as herself or Hannah Montana. You know, I don't think that she's had a lot of stuff necessarily written for her to do beyond this character, Hannah Montana, and then a version of herself. And like seven of them were music videos, so it's really kind of hard to count those.
Yeah.
Right. So, I think you're right. And I think she's just focused more on the acting.
It's hovering above Britney Spears' and below possibly Christina Aguilera and Jessica Simpson.
I'm glad we found something in this whole experience that we agreed on.
I think that was the fight, because honestly, other than the quality of the movie, I don't know how much more we're going to agree or disagree on. So,
well, yeah, maybe that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I know you have opinions on her personal life, and mine is like, I'm not dating her. So I don't give a shit. I'm not dating him, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is where we disagreed. I just think that he was too good for her, but, you know.
Also, she was a minor during this, so because she's not always in all the shots. Sometimes it is a body double because she was a minor while they made this movie. So
yeah, I saw that when I looked up.
After stuff. Hours, yeah. So, Sammy, since you made us watch this movie, and I did this to Joseph last week, it's your turn. Why don't you tell the people what this movie's about?
Alrighty. Okay, so basically, the movie is about
Ronnie. An unlikable winch.
Yes, correct. Ronnie, Miley Cyrus's character, and her little brother and Jonah get shipped off to their dad's for the summer. Kind of under duress, even though she is 18, her mom makes her go to her dad's beach house in on the coast in Georgia for the summer from New York.
Such a punishment.
And it's pretty clear from the outset that Ronnie doesn't have the best relationship with her dad, Greg Kinnear. Which, you know, shame on her because who would be mean to him? But she'd never really forgiven him for moving away from them after her parents' divorce. And she's clearly kind of had a troubled teenagehood. She got caught shoplifting and it's caused a lot of issues to the point where she's turning down her acceptance at Juilliard, which we'll get to that later and my issue with that.
I have a nitpick too.
So in an effort to not be around her dad too much, she kind of goes off and explores the beach in the town where she meets Liam Hemsworth, and whose name is escaping me right now.
Will.
Will, there we go. Where she meets Will, who is like the kind of stereotypical beach volleyball, super popular, everybody in the town loves him, dates all the girls kind of guy, complete opposite of her tragic suburban emo, my life has been so difficult persona she's trying to throw out there. She sort of gets hung up in the wrong crowd and makes a friend that causes her even more problems in her new town and gets her caught for shoplifting again. All this time, she is simultaneously trying to save some sea turtle eggs from raccoons, which leads her to call the aquarium, which Will just happens to volunteer at, which leads her and Will to spending a lot of time on the beach together and eventually kind of into a weird on-again, off-again romance, which he kind of aptly points out as she tries to end. That there's really nothing to end because they sort of just go from 0 to 60 until she discovers that Will is from this uber wealthy family that has a lot of expectations for him. And it's gotten even worse since his older brother passed away in a car accident and kind of comes to a head at his sister's wedding when he gets in a fight with one of her friend's boyfriends. And that kind of spirals out of control till she finds out that Will's friend and Will knew about the fact that her dad wasn't responsible for burning down the town church, which everyone in the town has blamed her dad for, who had nothing to do with it. He just passed out in the church because, side note, this is a Nicholas Sparks movie, which means somebody has to be dying. So she also finds out that her dad has cancer and it's terminal, and he's told them nothing about it. So ultimately, she breaks up with Will because he lied to her. She decides to stay with her father and help him kind of be comfortable for the rest of the time that he has and until he passes away. And Will comes home, and she just decides to forgive him. And that's the movie.
I believe I was about 15 minutes into the movie whenever I texted you that, because I was trying to look up like who some of these people were, because you know, I only really knew 4 people in this movie. And thanks, Wikipedia, you had to let me know that Greg Kinnear was dying in this whole time. I believe I once again called Nicholas Sparks an emotional terrorist.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I should have put a spoiler alert on that. That's a pretty crappy synopsis.
We have the
spoiler.
We had the spoiler alert at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, that's... It's one of those... I remember watching this. It's like, oh, okay, nobody's dying in this movie. And then all of a sudden that happened. Oh, yeah, never mind.
I think I'm fine with dying. It's when they're dead and they're a speaking character. That's when I lose it.
You know, I feel like you need to go back and watch that film so that you can get past this.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. Either of those, watch that movie again or get over it.
No, I agree with John. That part was really bad. I wasn't even on this episode, but I remember watching it. And it was like, oh, fuck this movie. I'm done.
You know what? That settles it.
She cut out, so what I heard was we're doing Caligula.
I think we need to bump this up because I think that movie's going to give you some perspective.
What movie? Caligula?
No. Caligula gives nobody perspective.
No, there's a perspective there, and it starts with, why does this exist? And I say that as the fan of the movie. So, were you okay that they changed it from North Carolina to Georgia?
I was, as a matter of fact. That didn't particularly bother me.
I have no idea they changed anything.
I do appreciate
Well, you're not...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, he's not the Nicholas Sparks... expert on the show, so
that's true.
Why would you know that?
I do appreciate that most of his films take place on the coast.
Yeah.
So that's a nice touch, and he didn't lose that. I think it's kind of irrelevant where it is.
As long as it's on the coast and there's a gazebo.
Correct. By the way, so we've got to point that out. This is a little bit off topic, but we always go down rabbit holes.
Our entire show is rabbit holes.
I was watching this movie the other day that I thought that we should do for the show, and somebody mentioned a gazebo because it was in one of those neighborhoods was for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the kids asked, "What's a gazebo?" And the other one goes, "That's just a place where old people go to sit and hold hands and stare at each other."
Aww. Kind of adorable.
A little. But it's also in Nicholas Sparks movies. Except for this one. I don't actually think there was a gazebo.
I didn't either. That was just the ongoing joke.
There might as well have been one.
Yeah. I think there was a beach house. But that's basically a gazebo that's been walled in.
You know, I'll allow that.
I mean, honestly, oh, well, you know, I guess technically instead of a gazebo, they just had that boat dock.
Yeah.
The one they talked on. That sort of functioned as their gazebo.
Mm-hmm. A dock is a adequate replacement for a gazebo. That's a sentence I just said.
Okay, so that scene does lead me to one of my questions. And John, you can probably answer this, but okay. Something I left out of the synopsis is Miley Cyrus is her character Ronnie is a kind of a prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing her and her dad shared is their love of the piano and writing music, which is why she hasn't played really since he left. Do you think it was really her playing?
No, not saying that they did. Probably doctor some of it. Who knows? I don't know. But he is supposedly playing piano through this movie.
Makes sense. I'm actually kind of surprised she was learning piano for the movie. It just seemed to me growing up as part of a musical family and being a musician herself that she probably could play it on her own. No matter what, you know, even if it's chopsticks, she can play better than me. So, and she had to work on that. I don't believe Juilliard was scouting a 5-year-old.
Yeah, probably not. Actually, now that you've mentioned it, we get to the crux of my issue with this, which is even if Juilliard is scouting, I'm no expert, and correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but even if Juilliard's scouting you, you're still going to have to apply.
Apply? and auditioned. Like, they just looked at a five-year-old playing the piano and were like, we're just going to give her a scholarship 13 years later. I'm like, that was... I didn't do this much during the movie, but that was the first time I went, well, that's bullshit. Now, if some... But I do agree, if someone out there knows that Juilliard just does that and just blindly throws teenagers scholarships sight unseen since, you know, their pre-K days, let us know. Drop us a little email.
Right, yeah. Because what if she had totally, like, gone off the rails and was terrible?
Yeah. This is entirely a possibility.
Or, you know, something like she hadn't played in several years because of...
It's six. You know. She said, fuck the piano and stop playing. You know,
angsty teenager crap.
Well, honestly, I think the angsty teenager would have been the one be like, oh, you want me to play the piano and get me out of here? Sure. Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. That's my assumption. What if My Chemical Romance weren't sullen teenagers? Would we have gotten Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge or The Black Parade? I don't know.
We might. You don't know.
Okay, so here's my other question that leads into kind of like a question for the movie. Do y'all have any, like, I don't know, issue with their relationship and the kind of roller coaster ride it went on? Because this is how I saw it. I'm curious how y'all saw it. Basically, it went from I hate you to I'm gonna hit on you to let's go on a date immediately to let's break up, but we're not in a relationship, to I love you.
It's a toxic relationship.
It's a Nicholas Sparks story.
They are annoying teenagers.
To be honest, this is like a teenage love story, so it doesn't seem that like everything is going to be a roller coaster of emotions. This movie should have been called Roller Coaster of Emotion.
Because, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think, I don't know, maybe it's just this. Yeah, I think maybe it belongs in my best line, but I just thought you made the best point. When she gets so angry at him because of the comment that girl made to her after he took her on the date to the aquarium, and the comment that Ashley made to her about how, you know, oh, he did the typical thing he does with all the girls, and so she gets super angry at him. And then she comes out and he's like, how can you be mad at me about somebody I saw before I even knew you? And she was like, I think we should just end this. And he's like, end what? I mean, they're not in a relationship. They haven't even, they've barely been on a date.
I don't know either. It's just,
well,
irrational.
Everything she does in this movie, she starts at a 10. Her hatred of being there with her dad opens the movie and she's at a 10. And she never leaves that level. It's just she's a 10 about different things.
It's true.
Or sometimes several things at once. Like her wanting to care for the turtles is at a 10. Her love and hatred simultaneously of everyone around her is at a 10.
I think that's the reason why I could not, because she was just exhausting.
Yeah.
Everything she did, I was just like, I don't care anymore. Please get off screen.
Yeah.
I got to the point where I was literally, every time she came on screen, I was like,
which is sad because she's, you know, in 85% of this movie.
I know.
There's very few scenes when she's not here.
I know.
Well, brother, like a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Now the brother did get a little bit on my nerves, but it's in that way that like all 9-year-old boys kind of get on your nerves a little bit. It's just like, okay, you're being just as dramatic as your sister.
The thing is, she should know better.
Yeah.
He has a...
Also, I've seen that kid in 2 movies now.
Oh, what's the other one?
He was the titular character in that John Cusack movie, Martian Child.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
Yeah. I saw that in the theater, and I couldn't tell you if I like that movie or if I hate that movie. That's the kind of movie it is. I just remember it had John and Joan Cusack on there, so it was in that period of time where I'm like, well, that's at least worth a matinee.
I kind of feel like her little brother was even more mature than she was.
Well, that's not saying much.
That's an entirely separate conversation. He was. I'm just saying he was also annoying, but he was also a 9-year-old boy. They're supposed to be annoying.
So he gets a pass.
Yes. Are there some times when I rolled my eyes? Yes. Does he have one of my worst line contenders? Absolutely. Does he have one of my best line contenders? Absolutely. Is he at one point the voice of reason in this movie? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Also, I just love that Greg Kinnear just is basically like, other than like whenever he's like separating them and drawing the line in the sand, he's kind of just even tempered. Like his daughter's caught shoplifting, doesn't seem to bother him.
Well, what do you expect? The man's dying. He doesn't give a shit anymore.
Well, and I thought she made a good point too, but let me ask you this. Since we're on the subject of that, at what point did you realize he was dying?
Well, 15 minutes into the movie when Wikipedia spoiled it for me, and also should have been whenever I hit play because it's Nicholas Sparks. But so for me, it was a question of like, when is this going to come up? Because you almost kind of forget about it for a little while.
Yeah, well, because I wasn't thinking about that, but that was like, well, this is a Nicholas Sparks movie. Somebody's got to be dying or sick or something.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, maybe this is the one Nicholas Sparks movie where it doesn't happen, and then it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm sick and dying. Oh there it is.
And it's like, ah, yeah, there we are.
I didn't really put it together. It was just like, it was one of those, I don't think there was many hints to it. It was just like, oh, yeah, this is happening.
Well, I was just wondering if you caught on to any of the hints, because they do allude to it a little bit with the vire, also when he mentions that he was taking some medicine.
I just equated
that but
old and...
He mentioned the medicine, like... You mentioned the medicine like 5 minutes before the movie told us, oh, by the way, he's sick.
No, that's true.
Yeah. Also, the movie brings up the fire at the very beginning of the movie, and then that, and I may have missed something because I'm not going to say I paid 100% attention on that second viewing, but it seems like a lot of these plots, and not since Licorice Pizza have I seen a movie with so many plots. It seems like things are important for about 5 minutes, and then they're dropped, and then an hour passes, and then they come back. Like, Blaze and her abusive boyfriend, Marcus, you know, pop in and out of this movie.
Actually, Will's, I actually think they were more annoying than Miley Cyrus's character in this movie.
Yeah, I know. That's why I didn't put them in the, you know, that's why I at least put Miley and Liam above them.
Yeah.
Yeah, not saying much, but... Will's, you know, overbearing parents drop in and out of relevancy. The mom is at the beginning and at the end of the movie with almost nothing in between. Like, the sea turtles, you know, drop in and out of importance. It's like, everything seems to be, like, important in moments in this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I guess that kind of leads to my second question. So, was there any hint or did you have any suspicion about what it was? Because they did foreshadow this. What it was Will was hiding.
No. I'm sure the movie did, or at least, you know, I know you've seen this movie more than the two of us combined, probably. So, I'm sure this movie has hints, but it needed to have, like, someone at the back of the, you know,
Let me walk y'all through this for a second, because I do remember catching on to this. So the first hint is when Will and Scott are in that whatever it was diner restaurant, and he sees Miley Cyrus and he talks to her and he comes back to Scott, and Scott says, "You do know who her father is, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, I know." Then it moves on from that to when he goes to Scott and says, we have to tell him. And he says, no, but he doesn't exactly say what we have to tell.
Well, I think one of, Well, but you also have to remember there was a scene of her at the volleyball game after she got busted shoplifting that second time, where the two mean girls behind her were mentioning the dad being an arsonist, like the arsonist and the thief. So you can take that, you know who her dad is, comment as, oh, you know who her dad is?
Right.
He's the crazy guy that burned the church down. So I'm not saying that those aren't hints setting up something. I'm just saying, unless you have seen this movie at least a couple of times and are really like fine tooth combing it for details, which is probably what I should have done, that's easy to miss.
Yeah, because I never picked up on that. But
yeah,
that was not something I was really paying attention to.
Yeah, and also you weren't going to watch this movie more than once.
I am not a professional like you, John, so no.
I honestly got to last night and I was thinking, do I need to watch it a second time or can I just wing it? And I was like, no, let's just go ahead and do this. So I wouldn't call that professional. Also, you've been on the show for a while now. You should know we never aspired to be professional.
What's that? I don't know what professional
is. This is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we talk about Marcus and Blaze for just a little bit?
Yes.
Do we have to?
Yes, because in some ways, I almost wanted a Marcus and Blaze movie because, number one, I don't know what she sees in him. Number two, are they homeless? Is she homeless? And does he, like, what is his connection to Will? Why did he just randomly come to, you know, fight him with a crowbar? These are questions that the movie never really answers.
I tell you what.
Do you want answers?
Not really, because I wanted my joke to work. But go ahead and pull the rug out from under it. I know she was living with him, and that she gave her the money to escape that situation, and that's why he showed up. I don't know what his connection with Will is. So if you have that answer, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, I don't think they were homeless because I think he was after her for rent money. I think when they were under the bridge, that was just a spot they hang out and drank. Mm-hmm. I think his connection to Will is mostly through Scott because it was kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, it was established that him and Scott were out behind the church. They were all, Will was there mm-hmm. too. They were all hanging mm-hmm. out and drinking and partying before Will left and the fire started. I don't think him and Will just seemed to me like kids that grew up in the same town, went to school together, and never liked each other because he was popular and, you know, Marcus was a burnout.
And very stupid.
That too.
Although I did like that scene of them doing the juggling with the fire.
Yeah, I actually really liked the setting of this movie. But while we're on the subject, I don't feel like we can really talk about Blaze and Marcus without talking about Blaze's real name.
Okay. But,
what is his real name?
Did y'all catch that?
No.
I did not.
Oh, she makes a comment when she first meets Ronnie that her name is Galadriel because her parents were real into Lord of the Rings. So that's why she goes by Blaze.
I say this far too often, but movies, stop referencing better movies.
I can't believe y'all missed that.
I did not pay attention to that at all.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a dropped line, but
yeah.
Yeah,
it's a very dropped line because I guess I'll never hear it because I'm not going back to hear it.
It's okay. I'll find the clip and I'll send it to you.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
Alrighty. Well, I don't know about y'all. I think I've covered pretty much everything other than the segments.
I think a lot of things I have left to say
are
answered within the segments. So,
okay. So, if you're a new listener, which, you know, great choice for first episode.
I can't tell if that's serious or sarcasm.
No, it's definitely serious, and there's no bias in that statement whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We have some segments here on Surviving Chick Flicks. They occasionally change from week to week.
They really shouldn't.
And we've definitely added a few and or renamed a few. But the one we typically start with is, did John like the soundtrack?
Okay, so the actual soundtrack is on Apple Music and Spotify and is the full soundtrack, which I always hate it whenever you come to an older movie and there's an actual soundtrack album and you go to listen to it streaming and like the rights have taken away so many songs, but they were all there. The soundtrack is weirdly made up of bands that I typically either don't like. Well, it's a mix of bands I like and bands I don't. And weirdly enough, some of my favorite songs on this were from artists I'm not the biggest fan of. Like, I don't like One Republic at all, but their song that kind of opens the soundtrack, Tyrant, I actually really kind of liked that song. I was just like, so they're not complete garbage. And I kind of, I kind of like the Maroon 5 song on here. Honestly, Miley's songs were kind of fine. They were just fine. And honestly, at the end of the day, most of the album is just that. Just, it's fine. It's a weak liking of it. Like, it's a weak survival of the soundtrack. Anything that has, like, Feist and the Ravenettes on it, I'm kind of okay with that.
So I kind of feel like this is further proof that romances have superior soundtracks, but that's just my theory. Also, side note, did you call this an older movie?
I did, but only because this movie is at least a decade old. There are soundtracks from movies that came out like 2-3 years ago that don't have the full soundtrack on the streaming services because of rights issues. So the fact that this now 10-12-year-old movie had the full album available to stream, that's kind of an anomaly. And that's what I meant when I called it an older movie.
Okay, fine. We'll move on.
You're like, I've got him! And then I was like, oh.
Just decided that's not my hill to die on today. Okay, so our next segment is usually Joseph's, the guess the Rotten Tomato score.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised by it, but I was just what I was like, oh, okay. But I'm really curious what Sammy is gonna say.
Okay, so it's a Nicholas Sparks film, so I'm thinking it's gonna kind of have an average rating. So I'm gonna say like a, oh my gosh, that's so accurate.
Okay.
Well, you know what? I'm actually going to switch that. I'm not going to do a critic's rating because that was so off, but I'm going to say the audience rating was like a 68.
Okay. Oh, wow. This time, Sammy was closer. It was a 65%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there was a big difference on this one between the audience and the critic rating.
Yeah, it's not too often that the audience rating is going to go below 50%. And if it does, I'm probably not going to see it.
Batman v Superman.
Ooh, out.
Would you like to know what Roger Ebert gave it out of 4 stars?
Sure.
1.
Anyone want to guess what he gave it out of 2 stars? Ooh, 2. Joseph has 1. What do you say, Sammy?
2.
2.5.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
At one point, he does say, I like Miley Cyrus. I like her in Spectre. The fact that she's been packaged with an inch of her life. And I think it'll be a long, long time until she plays a movie character like the freestanding, engaging heroines of Ashley Judd, but I can wait.
Oh. Ouch.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think Nicholas Sparks actually did her a disservice by writing such an unlikable character, because that did not do her any favors.
No. I think a lot of the problems with this movie is that it has so many things going on that if we just streamlined it to, obviously with the title, we got to keep the music thing. It's Nicholas Sparks, so we have to keep the cancer and maybe the sea turtles, and all the other side shit is just kind of superfluous. Yeah, like, does it matter that you know, she stole something in New York? Like, did we need that? Does it add anything?
No, not
probably,
really.
But
okay. I believe our next segment is best line, worst line.
No, we skipped the Bechdel test.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go for it.
Well, here's the thing. It's not an entry on Bechtel Movie List website, so I don't have their definitive rating. But as I've been playing the movie through my head, this movie has at least two named, at least two named female characters, but I don't know if any of them had conversations not about men long enough to really count. Like,
I think even that whenever... they did. And the reason I'm going to suggest that is when Blaze and Ronnie first met, they weren't talking about men at all. So I think that's possibly long enough to count. And I think her and her mom probably had a conversation long enough, maybe.
I feel like most of the conversations with her were about her dad.
And that's possible.
Yeah, but you're right about her and Blaze. And also, I seem to think her and Ronnie and Blaze in the record store at least had a moment, in the conversation that wasn't about Marcus or any of the guys.
Right.
Yeah. So it barely squeaks by, thus proving that the Bechdel test is incredibly easy to pass.
Which means if you don't pass it, you definitely did something wrong.
Well, I mean, I get movies like 12 Angry Men or Glengarry Glen Ross that were written for all male casts. Like, I get that. Not passing the Bechdel test. Like, that's, no big deal. But when things like 50 Shades of the Grey are able to pass, like, what did you do? Oh, back to the soundtrack thing real quick. I've met one of the artists on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Edwin McCain was on the soundtrack, and he played at the theater I used to work at, and he was a very nice person.
Cool.
I'm glad to hear it went that way and not the other way.
Yeah. I only have one real horror story to tell, and I still like that artist.
I think you've told me that one, too.
Yeah, but we'll just let audiences guess.
Okay, so best line, worst line. What you got?
I got a couple of best lines. My number one pick, and this is why I wanted to go first, when Will shows up after one of the many times Ronnie has gotten mad at him, and Steve opens up the door, and he's like, "Excuse me, sir, can you tell me what's going on?" And Steve's response of, "That would require my understanding of how the female brain works, which I don't. But if you'd like to come in and be clueless together, you're more than welcome."
Dang it, you stole one of mine.
You took one of mine, too.
No. That one. I'm not going to lie, because we all were watching this movie going, okay, that's a standout line.
Yeah.
So I did have backups, but did y'all?
I have one. It was a fun moment with the kid that I actually enjoyed. Mom says it's because she has PMS. He goes, even though Jonah, of course I do, Dad. I'm not little anymore. it's the pissed at men syndrome.
You stole my other one.
Well, I'm sure you have more. I was trying to search for one.
I guess one of my other kind of favorite. It's more of a moment than it is the actual line. But I do love it when she meets Will's parents for the first time, and it's like the most awkward meeting ever. And she's having an awkward dinner of her life with them, and her dad offers her the roast beef, and she says no, and he goes, "Ronnie's a vegetarian." And her dad just goes, "Why?"
Why? Oh, that was a good one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have another good line, and it's one of Greg Kinnear's lines. This is just another part of our terrific summer. Not one of the better parts, I admit. In reference to his cancer. Ronnie says, you lied. You said you were fine. You're not fine. That was a lie. And Steve's like, no, I hoped. I didn't lie. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, he has a lot of good lines. They're like a little more sentimental. One of my favorites is, and I mean, it's kind of sappy, but in what he writes to her, where he tells Ronnie, he goes, "Love is fragile, and we're not always the best caretakers." I thought that was really good. I thought that was well written.
Yeah, I also liked his line about, "I don't have very many lectures left in me, so pay attention."
Yeah.
Are you ready for worse lines?
Go for it.
Okay. The obviously one of the obviously childless adults here. One of my worst lines comes from the little brother, and it's they're having the conversation about love, and he changes. And I'm not going to do the line verbatim, but it's basically where he changes the conversation from love to cookies. And I was just like, I hate this moment so much. And it's just further proof I'm dead inside.
Well, for me, it was like anything when Blaze and Marcus were arguing. I hate every moment of that. Because it had one of the dumb, it made me go, really? That was what y'all went with? Mm-hmm. She's going and he's like, please don't leave. I have nowhere else. He just goes, shut up. And it just the way he delivered it, I was just like, that's bad.
Sir, there is better writing and delivery, line delivery on the CW.
There really is.
Oh, God, stop making fun of the CW.
We will never not make fun of the CW.
Okay, just like you banned me from saying that line from The West Wing until I saw the episode, you are banned from criticizing the CW until you've watched both The Vampire Diaries and the originals.
No, I've seen other shows on the CW, so I can criticize. I can also criticize CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox.
Oh, and Supernatural.
No, that's like 17 years. No, I'm watching that. That's 15 seasons of 22 episodes. No, I am not doing that.
It's worth every episode.
Look.
I guarantee you it's not.
I love The Flash. And it even has some cringy CW writing on that show. Yeah. I sat through all of season 2 and half of season 3 of Supergirl, and I said, no more. I can't do
this. What are you talking about? The show Supergirl only had one season, and it was on CBS. Nothing else happened.
Are you sure? Because I have PTSD.
I am very sure. And my eye's twitching right now. And also, if you will notice, I actually said the CW was better. Well, Sammy just got fired. Also, if you'll notice, I actually...
That would piss you off.
You know, you have to... I'm going to tell Karen on you, because she's going to be here next week. You got to deal with her.
Speaking of which, you should watch The Vampire Diaries, because he's on that show, and he's literally the worst character.
Or I could just not do that and watch what I want.
You know, John makes a pretty valid argument.
You made me watch The West Wing.
But that show's good.
So is The Vampire Diaries.
Here we thought we weren't going to have a fight on this episode.
Of course, it had to be a completely irrelevant one. Okay, no. So I don't really have a worse line, but I kind of do, but it's in a moment I really love. I think it was just kind of the line in the execution. So when the second night that she stays out there and Will comes to hang out with her so she doesn't have to be out there by herself, and she's reading Anna Karenina. he quotes it. And then she tells him, she's like, oh, quoting Tolstoy. And he said, no.
But no, I'm quoting.
Yeah, and he does the fake German. I was just like, oh, no. No.
Tolstoy's Russian.
Fake Russian, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah. No, honestly, whenever he said, I'm actually quoting his translator, I'm like, okay, you just kind of won me over with that line. Because I'm like, I'm that petty.
Yeah, it was actually kind of good. This could be a new segment, by the way, in these movies. We could rate the male lead's game. And I actually think he had fairly good game.
So are we ready to move into the penultimate categories?
Before we do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let's go ahead and do the good, bad, and the ugly first.
Okay. I know this moment is cliche as hell. I know that. But Greg Kinnear drawing the line in the sand on the beach.
Oh, yeah, that was really cute.
Yeah. And also, I know we have criticized Miley Cyrus's acting, and I feel like we will continue to do that before the show is over. But there was a moment that genuinely made me laugh, and it was like she had fallen asleep on the beach, and she was startled awake, and her look, and just her expression was like genuinely funny to me. Like, someone probably literally scared her awake for that. And she wasn't sure where she was.
Okay, well, was it my turn?
Uh-huh.
The good, it ended. I'm just
Oh.
Boo.
Now, like I said, there
were moments you just like stay over there. You know, you just stay over there with your Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
I agree.
You can just go sit directly down, Joseph.
I just thought that was good. But no, seriously, there's a couple parts that were endearing. Like, anytime Greg Kinnear had a heart to heart moment with any of his kids, that was really good because he's just a good actor. Yeah. And there was a couple moments, like I pointed out with the kid, that there were cute moments and everything, but to be honest, I was having a hard time finding really things I really did like in this movie. This movie was a chore for me.
I genuinely love the moment when the little brother was like, Lee, just get out of here. Like, whenever he was basically reading her the riot act, I was just like, all right, little man, you're doing good.
Like I said, moments were pretty good. I enjoyed those moments.
Amy?
Yes. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff I like about this film. I do love the setting. I'm a sucker for a southern beach town. I despite her acting, which I think got in the way some, like I said, I think that they had fairly good chemistry, and it sort of made it work. And I liked any of the moments he had the hearts to heart with his kids. I think that although the love story was great, and that's what most people are going to watch it for, really, yeah. Story between Greg Kinnear and his kids is the better story. It's the better crafted story.
Yeah.
The love story was kind of disjointed. It didn't have the right pacing or rhythm to it. Whereas what was going on with him and his kids made a lot more sense.
It was just but, more.
Right. And the one thing I did really love too is I love the relationship between Will and her brother Jonah. I thought all of that stuff worked. I loved the scene with them in the hospital. I loved the scene after they got back from the hospital when he was freaking out and Will was there. And then he trains Will how to build the stained glass window.
Yeah.
All of that completely worked for me. That's something that the female brain does that it just works. It works for us.
Well, it's not necessarily female brain because the moment whenever the younger brother was breaking down, trying to finish the stained glass, having just learned his dad is dying, like that was genuinely kind of heartbreaking to watch. Like, you know, that was a good moment. I'm glad you brought it up, but
yeah, props to the kid.
As for me, the bad and the ugly, I mean, we have covered a lot of it, and some of it for me feels like it would be bordering on either nitpicking or beating a dead horse because, I can't pick out one moment of Marcus and Blaze because they were always kind of terrible. And Miley Cyrus is not going to win any acting awards for this movie, but I didn't totally hate every moment she was on the screen. And I feel like I've kind of like talked shit about this movie to death. And now I'm getting closer to my actual opinion, so I'm going to stop talking now.
Okay, so I think that kind of leads us to a little added segment that I want to have for these movies, our rankings. Every segment we've done, I mean, every Nicholas Sparks movie, we've kind of done Sammy's ranking of the movies. And so I'm curious to know what y'all's is. And
I think we should actually save this for after the big question. I feel like I would rather reveal my hand before I get into that. Okay. And honestly, my hand has actually changed in the course of this conversation slightly. But so let's get into it. We know how Sammy feels, but Joseph, John, did we survive the last song? Joseph.
I'll be honest with you, I tried on this movie, and it's, like I said, I was struggling to find things I enjoyed. It was a bit of a chore for me to get through. Like I said, there's some gleaming moments, very few and far between for me, but the whole time I was watching this movie, I was just waiting for it to end. So for me, I did not survive this movie. I
if I never see this movie again, I'll be happy.
Gotcha. Sammy, why don't you go next? Because I feel like the audience knows where you're going to land.
Yeah, it's no surprise. Yes, I definitely survived. Despite, you know, Miley Cyrus is not my favorite, I endure her throughout this movie. I like it.
So, I said a second ago that me revealing my rank may determine, you know, how I felt about this movie. Now, but also my rank has changed in the course of the conversation, and we'll get into that in a second. But my survival or non-survival has not changed since the first time I watched this movie. And this movie has a flaw or 100. And also, it did feel kind of like a chore to watch both times. Like, I wanted to watch literally anything else. But I said at the beginning in the pre-show, when we got to do our episode on The Departed, by the time we were recording it, I wanted to watch literally anything else other than a Martin Scorsese film. But if I'm honest, this wasn't the worst experience I've had watching a movie. And in fact, it has all the hallmarks and cliches of a Nicholas Sparks movie, but like a Friday the 13th sequel. And I mean one of the later sequels, you know, not the classic era. Did it do what it, you know, set out to do? Yes. Did I actually enjoy watching it? This may surprise y'all. Yeah, I actually kind of liked this movie, and I did survive it. So we've only done 4 Nicholas Sparks movies, and I believe we all know which one is my least favorite. Safe Haven is my least favorite, and Walk to Remember is my current favorite. So before this episode, I would have said Last Song would have been my number 2, but I'm actually going to flip-flop that, and this is my 3rd favorite Nicholas Sparks movie, and I've kind of put the choice up higher, because as dumb as the last half hour of that movie is, it was at least fun. This movie is a little bit less fun to watch, even if I do think it's a slightly, possibly better made film. You would probably get me to rewatch The Choice a lot easier than this one, but I will watch this one in a perpetual loop on like 6 TVs, playing it for 24 hours for the rest of my life before I watch Safe Haven again.
Oh my gosh, you're so wrong.
All right, but I am curious where the rest of you guys lean.
Just go for it.
Okay, well, I wasn't on the podcast for Safe Haven and The Choice, but I have seen Safe Haven. The only one I haven't seen is The Choice. But I'm going to...
Oh, God, I almost want to have a movie night and make you watch The Choice.
Yes, we need to. Let's do it.
We need to do this.
Okay, but for Kurt right now, I'm going to assume The Choice is somehow better than Safe Haven. Because I fucking hate that movie. Especially the very end, I'm just like, no, this movie, no. I hate you. So Safe Haven is bottom, and The Choice is just up after that, just because I don't know. I've never seen it. I would put The Last Song as number 2, and it's that one. Like I said, only reason The Choice is number 4, number 3, was because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, actually, Walk to Remember, because I actually enjoyed.
Yeah, I cannot wait for Joseph watching The Choice, and when he thinks it's over, and there's like a half hour left to go.
Oh God,
I can't wait.
Is this gonna be Brideshead Revisited all over again for me?
No,
no.
It's gonna be like, that was kind of a fun movie. Why is there still 30 minutes left? Oh God.
So this ranking is gonna kind of change, because I know where one of the other movies we have coming up falls for me. But my ranking is easily A Walk to Remember is my favorite, and that's just period.
Well, it's better of all of them so far.
Yeah, that's my favorite of all Nicholas Sparks
movies. Walk to Remember is the GOAT.
It's the GOAT. Second for me usually waffles back and forth between The Choice and Safe Haven, but if I'm honest, I watch The Choice a lot more. It's more like happy, and I think ultimately I like it better, even though I waffle between whether or not it's a better made movie. But I would say The Choice is number two. Safe Haven is probably number three. And this would be number four.
Oh, wow.
I'm just picturing Joseph's face when the wind chimes happen.
You need to get over those wind chimes, man.
No.
No! I just like said it was my second.
Just let it die.
But okay, you have to understand, I ironically enjoy the wind chimes. I do not, I unironically hate the dead wife.
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know what?
You did not get this mad in Sixth Sense when Bruce Willis turned out dead.
Because that was well done.
That was not a twist. Also, that was a good movie.
Because that was a well done twist in the movie. We're seeing this now. It's just like, really? It turned into really awful, cheesy territory.
Sammy, I kind of want to watch The Choice right now. You have to appreciate that that even if it's enjoyment for maybe the wrong reasons, that I enjoy it. I mean, you have to at least appreciate that.
I don't blame you. I kind of want to watch it too.
Normally when we get done, I want to watch Draft Day, but no, not right now. I kind of want to watch The Choice. I wonder if I still have that movie.
Yeah, that's maybe we need to do a double feature of next week's film and The Choice. Like,
our friends are coming back, and we're finally getting to Five Cream. Not only are we covering that movie, but the joke gets to die next week. Karen and Mark and Mindy will be back, and we're finally going to discuss 2022's Scream. And there are no wind chimes in Scream. Just going to say that now.
I don't remember seeing any of them, no.
Yeah.
There's a lot of murderers.
There is. It's kind of like a Nicholas Sparks movie. People die in it.
They have a terminal illness of having a knife.
Very fatal blood removals from their bodies.
Oh yeah, it's just, it's very tragic.
Yeah. Sammy can't wait.
Done with both of you.
Hey, I survived a Miley Cyrus starring Nicholas Sparks movie. Let me have my fun.
This is true. So now we're going to find out if you survived the Zac Efron Nicholas Sparks movie.
Kind of curious, because I kind of like the Zac Efron now. Does he sing in the movie?
No.
Well, then it loses point.
Is he dead in the movie?
No.
Okay, then it gets that point back. while Sammy's still speaking to us, does anybody have anything they want to shout out this week?
I finally watched Boys in the Hood. I'm only like, 30 years too late, I think.
just 30, 32, somewhere in there, you know. Well, yeah.
I just never have seen it before, but it's really fucking good.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
And that was like his first movie. So
really?
And like, yeah, I think it was his first film. I'm 99% sure it was his first film.
Wasn't it Ice Cube's first movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he wrote Doughboy specifically for Ice Cube.
Oh wow! So yeah, he knocked it out of the park on that part too.
We should do that movie on the show.
I'd be down. That's a movie I wouldn't mind watching again. It's really well done.
Yeah, you might say it's rewatchable.
It's very rewatchable.
You know, Bill Simmons never has to sit through this shit.
Owen. Me and John went and saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I think everybody should see that movie.
Oh god, that movie is so fantastic. You know,
it's so good.
I think every possible human emotion you can have, you're going to have in that movie. You're also going to be baffled and like wondering why what's happening on screen is happening, but by the end of it,
it all makes
sense. It all makes sense, but I'm kind of trying to keep my reviews of it as spoiler-free as possible, because I think the less you know about that movie going in, the better experience you're going to be. It's going to be for you. But I've been describing it as an incredibly over-the-top, complicated telling of a simple family drama.
And as much as you need.
Yeah. And right now, it's my favorite film of the year. And if the guy who played Short Round, I wish I had committed his name to memory, but I just didn't. But Short Round from Indiana Jones, and then Michelle Yeoh, if they don't get some Oscar attention at the end of the next year, I'm going to send Will Smith to their house and slap every Academy member.
Yeah, they knocked it out of the park in this movie.
They really did, and it's just such a bizarre movie. But I told Sammy, like, I think that even Sammy would, she's going to be scratching her head, wondering why we would make her watch this, wondering why so many things are happening, but by the end, I think she would absolutely love it.
I would agree.
Maybe you should just take Saturday off. Let's just do a triple feature. Let's go watch that movie. Oh, it's a quadruple feature. We watch that, and then we watch the Nick Cage movie, and then we watch The Choice, and then once you start speaking to us again, we can watch Scream.
Well, I only have one little shout out.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Styles and Shania Twain at Coachella, because if you haven't seen their performance, it's pretty epic.
I haven't watched it, but I've seen the headline, and I was just like, that's awesome that he did that. Also, I'll try to get this episode out for this to still be relevant, but I think, Sammy, you and I have a shout out we should be making.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about
our boy? I'm talking about our boy Fritz. Yeah, Fritz.
Yes. Shout out to the top 14.
Yep. By the time this episode comes out, hopefully he's in the top 10. So everyone, when you're hearing, go vote. Just text 23. You can do it 10 times to the number. I'm just so super proud of Fritz. You know, having seen him like 4 times in Newsies, and recently he played Tony in West Side Story. Super talented kid and just super nice guy, and I can't think absolutely of anyone more deserving. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Joseph, thank you for doing another episode. Sammy, you win this round.
Thank you for not killing us.
Yeah, you won this round. So hopefully you survive Scream. And listeners.
Oh no! I really think that we should be thanking Sammy every episode for not trying to kill us.
I agree.
We give her plenty of opportunity or reasons to kill us.
In my defense, if Sammy and our other group of friends haven't stabbed me yet, it's not going to happen. So,
hey, the night is young, John.
I don't think Sammy's leaving her house to stab me. Also, considering I have some Scentsy candle warmers I'm supposed to give her.
First of all, not till I get the Scentsy candle warmers. And also, that is a lot of effort. And he's, like, all the way downtown. And so...
Yeah. And also, when she's at work...
And when I'm at work...
She has to go down 7 whole floors to find me.
Yeah, like, seriously. I would have to go down 7 whole floors, locate him. The vending machine is not on his floor. So, no. I don't really see what's in it for me.
Yeah. Plus, as soon as she walks in my office, there's a camera. So.
Well, that's why you text, like, John, I have an emergency. Please, I need to talk to you really quick. I'm in trouble.
It comes up. See through that shit. I see that. Most 99% of our communication half the time is text. So
I was trying.
All right. You tried. You failed, but you tried. Also, if either of us are going to get stabbed, it's going to be you, because I think we're still somewhat pissed off at you about Mortal Kombat.
Well, you know, and I expect that for at least another 6.
Hey, Sammy still references Sleepaway Camp, so we got a lot of mileage out of Mortal Kombat.
Yes,
still left to go. All right. Well, listeners, thank you for tuning in. And until next week, I don't have a Miley Cyrus pun, so just assume I did, and it was great.
Well, no, we came in like a wrecking ball.
Oh, yeah, that's right. This show, the fact that we just, that some of us survived and some of us didn't, it's just the best of both worlds.
Yes, that was great.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022. Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Hey Dad, can we fly a kite today?
Absolutely not. We are flying 3 kites today. All of us.
You're dreaming, Dad.